This is a replay of the Tuesday night, April 8th, WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings on Los Sports Preempt Us. That's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from One VoIP. For the world's best customer service, it's One VoIP. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have 3 hours to spend together. I'll be playing your requests. Yes, loaded a bunch of them. And looking forward to your calls. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. But every now and then, and more often of late, I read stories and it seems like there is a big piece of the story missing. And this one is about JetBlue. Now, you'll remember back in early January when a flight from New York to Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport in Broward County, Florida. When it landed, they discovered that there were two teens in the landing gear. Exactly how that works, I don't know. Usually it's wheel wells, but regardless. Now, it took until this week for anything to come out regarding who they might be. And Florida investigators used extensive DNA testing, and they discovered that it was Jeke Lucy, 18 years old, and Elvis Castillo, 16 years old, according to the Broward County Sheriff's Office. Now, both teens were from the Dominican Republic. That's important to our story. All right, so their bodies were found late at night, January 6th, after JetBlue 1801 landed at Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International. Okay, so that's JFK to Fort Lauderdale. With me so far? All right. Well, so how did these Dominican boys get on this plane? Were they here in the country? Oh, no. Then you read the next sentence. That particular craft had made a stop on January 5th in Puerto Plata, Dominican Republic. Seems to me that that is where the two teens got into the landing gear. Yeah. And so that means it took off from Puerto Plata. I don't know where it landed. Maybe New York, for all I know. Nothing was noticed. It took off again from New York. And then when it got to Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International, they noticed. Yeah. I think it was Gordon who wrote to me who said, I guess that assigned seating isn't working out so well. Yeah, and a little issue about maintenance? Yeah, maybe. That part of the story was the part that really drove me crazy. It's like, wait a minute, why am I not hearing? Yeah, why weren't those two boys discovered? Yeah, after the flight landed from the Dominican Republic? And I guess the answer is, we're not going to know. Then I've got a story out of Wisconsin. Yes, that's right, behind the cheddar curtain. About a guy who slept next to his murdered girlfriend for a month and then decided to move her body and call the cops. Yeah, this brain trust, we'll try to tell you all about this. I say try because you really do need pen and paper and some diagrams. But Sirkin was his first name. I'll call him Smith. I don't know. He was Turkish national. He was finally taken into custody and charged with one count of first-degree reckless homicide, a modifier for use of a dangerous weapon in the slaying of Ceylon, his girlfriend. Now, according to the probable cause affidavit, on February 22nd, we have Sirkin walking into the Milwaukee police building and telling officers at the front desk that his girlfriend was dead inside their apartment in the 1300 block of North 10th Street. And by the way, he had to use Google Translate, an app, to actually say anything because he speaks Turkish. Well, actually, whatever he speaks is in English. And so he used his phone and Google Translate to basically say, there's a dead body in my apartment. And so he said, well, 20 days earlier, mind you, 20 days earlier, he ran an errand, leaving his girlfriend at the apartment, and when he returned, he found her dead on the floor. He stated he was gone for an hour, and when he returned, she was just lying on the floor, covered in blood. Initially, he thought that she was joking. He tried to lift her. He said she was cold as ice, and he said he fainted from the shock. Apparently, it was a 20-day faint because he didn't call the cops real quickly. And he also, like I say, not too bright. He admitted that he slept by the dead body on the floor where he initially found her for 20 days. Needless to say, officers figured they needed to go to the scene. No, really? They get to the apartment where they find the girl's body lying with a pillow behind her head. The medical examiner determined that she suffered multiple stab wounds to the torso and neck and noticed that the state of decomposition, that might be the only true part of this guy's story, was that she was dead about a month. Meanwhile, the body appeared to have been staged. That's what I mean about this guy not so bright. During the search of the apartment, there were no knives on the premises other than a couple dull butter knives and some box cutters. And due to the apparent staging of the crime scene, they brought in a Blue Star blood developer, and that allows investigators to detect invisible traces of blood. And the results indicated that she was stabbed in a different area of the home and dragged to where she was located by the police. And so in the trash, they found food receipts from February 14th through the 21st, indicating that he'd been in the apartment regularly since her death. So it isn't he walked in, found her. He was there. And multiple items in the home were found to have blood splatter, and they were collected into evidence and all of that. Meanwhile, there was a note they found that the landlord had threatened to evict them because he owed $1,257 in back rent. And a neighbor said, I heard them arguing, screaming that lasted about 5 to 10 minutes. That was allegedly on the night she was stabbed. So meanwhile, they get surveillance footage because there was a local Pick and Save grocery that had a camera. And sure enough, we have our perpetrator on the night of January 24th purchasing a bottle of bleach. Oh, no, that doesn't seem too damning. And the following day, he purchased a nail gun and tried to kill himself by shooting himself in the head. He was found to have a nail in the head extending into his brain. He was taken to the hospital, underwent surgery, had that removed. After the nail was removed, he said he went out for about an hour on January 24th, and when he returned home, she was dead. And so that's our story. So, needless to say, you can't make them up. You just can't. If this was in some television drama, you'd say unbelievable. So he denies being involved in her death and cover up and everything else, and he's held on $1 million bond. So that's the deal in Milwaukee. But yeah, what on earth was he sleeping next to her for a month? All right, and then that's the best story he can come up with. I realize there's limitations to Google translation, but even so, he could have done better than that. 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. And your first request coming up next on WGN Radio.
A thousand miles of coming. Guess I've worn blisters on my heel. Trying to find me something better here on the streets of Bakersfield. Hey, you don't know me, but you don't like me. Say you care less how I feel. But how many of you that sit and judge me? Bakersfield. Francisco. I spent a night there in the can. Lived through this drunk man in my jail cell. I took $15 from that man. Left him my watch and my old house key. Don't want folks thinking that I'd steal.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that's Buck Owens and Dwight Yoakam, Streets of Bakersfield, 1988 version. Lisa in Dundee wanted to hear that. That song is a soap opera. I think we probably talked about this before, but I don't know. There's a songwriter, Homer Joy, and Homer Joy had been trying to pitch Buck Owens for forever, and basically nothing was coming of it. And he was promised there'd be a session, and there wasn't. So he was showing up every day, and they're saying, oh, the Buckaroos are out of town, the Buckaroos are whatever, they're not available, et cetera, and so forth. And so Homer Joy was just all ticked off as all get out. And so after the door being slammed in his face one time too many, he actually took off and he was walking the streets of Bakersfield. And it turned out that he wound up with new shoes, getting blisters all over his feet, and he was just beyond upset. So he went back to his hotel room and in about a minute wrote The Streets of Bakersfield. Now, by the way, Buck Owens was interested in, and his representatives were interested in Homer Joy doing a Hank Williams sound-alike album. And that's how this all came about. And he said, I don't want to be Hank, I want to be me. Eventually, he said, well, I'll come in and record it on the condition that I get to record some of my own songs. Fair enough. And so that's how he started trying to pitch Buck Owens and his management on a song, and they kept turning him away. Then they write him Streets of Bakersfield. Well, the next day, he goes back to Buck Owens Studios, and at that point, the studio manager is just so frustrated. I'm seeing this guy again. Now, mind you, they've done him dirty not recording him up to this point, obviously, because they said that they would. But out of frustration, he hands Homer Joy a guitar and says, well, sing me one of those songs you'd record if we could get you some time to record it. And so Joy, in one of those kind of in-your-face gestures, sang Streets of Bakersfield, which, you know, wasn't even a day old at that point. The studio producer was interested enough that he goes back to Buck Owens and said, maybe you want to come and hear this. And they had Homer Joy play it again. They did. And at that point, they said, well, the Buckaroos do have the day off, but you can tell them we're going to do a recording session on Homer this afternoon. And so they did, but Buck Owens also did, and they released the Buck Owens song in 1973, and it flopped. But, you know, 15 years later, 1988, Buck Owens and Dwight Yoakam goes to number one on the charts. So that's the deal. And of course, when you hear the song, it is narrated in the first person. Yeah, I came looking for something I couldn't find anywhere else. Yeah, right. I don't want nobody. I just want a chance to be myself. Well, that was absolutely autobiographical for Homer Joy. And the good thing is that since he wrote it, he got the writer's royalties on a number one song. And you've got a number of people who covered it, including Vince Vaughn and others. So, all right, there you go. And that was for Lisa in Dundee, 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. All right, so, yes, James always sends me a zillion stories, most of which we've been putting aside only because there's just so much mayhem. But some of them are true gems. So, James, welcome back to, let me do this here, make sure we can welcome you back to WGN Radio. How's it going, James? How you feeling?
Oh, I'm feeling okay.
Good. Well, you're feeling better than the depressed people who were taking that medication that turned out to have metal shavings in the tablet.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't too good. Let's put it that way.
Here's what I want to know. And the FDA has now a boxed warning on it because it was recalled. The presence of foreign material embedded resembling a metal shaving in one tablet. We don't know how many. But nowhere in this article, and there's many paragraphs, do we find out where is this drug made?
Yeah, that was the weird thing. Then I tried to see if there was some follow-up stories.
Mm-mm.
Nope.
Yeah, and these are generics, of course. So, you know, you can look at the name on the on the package, but I don't know where Venlex, Fascine, or whatever is made, and there's nothing on it that tells me.
So. Yeah, and I almost want to say, okay, it almost sounds like if it's not made here, it might not be. Okay, it's probably overseas because a lot of generics come from overseas.
Oh, of course it does, absolutely. And people don't realize when they're taking generics and have a problem, they can't sue the brand name. They can sue the generic, but good luck on some of that. So apparently the name on the package said Zydus. And ZydusUSA.com, but from what I understand, they weren't responsive. But I guess you could report problems to them. But geez, Louise, I'd like to know where this was made.
Yeah, I would too. But a lot of times you say, "What? Okay, what gives?" I mean, it's almost as if we're like saying, okay, it reminds me of when they do these ads for the drugs, and then they'll say a little line that says, this might cause
death.
This, okay,
yeah, death.
With your doctor on.
Yeah, right, exactly. No, that's the best part of those ads are the disclaimers, because I think they're hilarious. Hilarious that people would actually take things after hearing that disclaimer. But the other story, and we're about to hit news, so I want to move along. But it has nothing to do with anybody dying. Something to do with maybe trees dying. But a tropical tree in Panama has evolved that it can kill its enemies with lightning. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm like thinking, I almost was thinking of a cartoon character years ago, Thunder.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't know. Apparently the deal is, yes, when I first read the headline, I thought, wait a minute, this tree is able to throw lightning? No, the tree, in fact, is struck by lightning because it's very tall, but it is completely impervious to it. However, anything that is a parasitic hanging onto the tree dies, and nearby trees tend to go. So this is a fascinating story.
Yeah, and you start, and you say, whoa, this is okay. This is something worth at least you just want to say, well, it's worth thinking about. The next time you start running for you say, oh, I won't stand under that tree.
Yeah, well,
they actually tell you never to stand under the tree during a storm anyway.
Well, the good news, it was in a tropical forest in Panama, so I have a feeling we won't be near this particular tree. But yes, stay away from the trees. They may fend for themselves. And I say, good for them. All right, so good deal. The news is next. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you, James.
Okay,
all right,
you
good
have
deal.
A nice
you
day.
Too. And we'll find out what's going on in the world at large on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That, of course, is Lloyd Price, 1959, ABC Paramount. Where were you on our wedding day? And that was Robert and Stickney who wanted to hear that. All right. So I was talking about the added ingredient in this particular drug, and our own David Jennings has some information that I don't. So, David, hello.
Hello. All right. Venlafaxine hit the market in 1993. Pfizer is the company that was the inventor of the product.
Right.
Now, since then, it had its run. So Now, of course, it goes into the generic area. And a number of companies manufacture it. And let me find
I think you had like 10 of them. And this is not surprising to me. But what is, David, is when people buy these generic drugs, they think that it's from a manufacturer they've heard of, but it may not be.
That is also very true.
Yeah, and what's really weird is the laws of who you can sue. You know, assuming you're really done in by one of these drugs, very often the brand name maker, the guy who did the patent and had it all that time, may not be liable.
In that case, it would be Pfizer. They were the ones who created the drug, but it only gets X number of years before they lose that patent protection, and then anyone can manufacture the drug.
Right, absolutely. And of course, that period of time is so precious few years, because the clock starts ticking when they go into researching it. So long before it's on the market, that patent is ticking. And so, yeah, they don't have a long time. And that's why some of these drugs are ridiculously expensive. But when it goes generic, like I say, there are some instances where Pfizer could still be responsible, but there's a lot of instances where they're not. And I think it's kind of wrong that most of us have no idea who makes whatever we're ingesting.
Well, here are some names. Maybe you know a couple of them. Alembic. It was approved to manufacture the venlafaxine hydrochloride E extended release tablet in June of last year. Anora Pharma, 2019. Aurobindo Pharma in 2011, Dr. Reddy's Labs Limited, whoever they are,
yes, I love
in
that.
2011, Granules in 2023, Inventia Healthcare, McLeod's Farms Limited, Medicap Labs, Orbion Pharmaceuticals. Teva is a company that some people may have heard of. They got to start making it in 2010. Wockhardt Bio AG in 2011. Yichang Human Well in 2021. And Zydus Pharmaceuticals USA Inc. in 2011.
Yeah, I just looked up Teva while we were talking. And okay, that's made in Tel Aviv. But how many of those, I wonder, are made in China?
No clue.
Yeah, exactly. And we don't have any clue when we pick up that prescription. Unless they've given us the bottle, we don't know where it came from.
And on Teva, it's Teva Pharmaceuticals USA, and they're in North Wales, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. And there's a lot of pharmaceutical areas around Philadelphia and southern Jersey. There are a ton of them. So that's comforting. But now I wrote down many of the ones you called. I'm going to see if I can find some of these and find out where they are on a map.
Well, I wish you luck in the venture.
Yeah, I can't wait for Dr. Reddy. All right, David. Thank you so much. Good
You're
to talk to you.
You're very welcome.
Okay. All right. So very good. Doesn't he have the best voice? Yeah, absolutely. Whatever he's saying, I believe it, just because he makes it sound so good. All right, so Lisa in Dundee, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh.
How are you?
Thanks so much for playing my song.
Absolutely.
I love the guitar work in that song.
Yeah.
You know, at the very beginning.
Uh-huh.
I just love it, so thank you.
Sure.
But when you talked about that story at the beginning of the program, it reminded me several years ago, back in the late 90s, and I think it happened in Florida, where a 14-year-old boy killed his neighbor.
Uh-huh.
And he put the body under his waterbed.
Oh, God.
And he slept in the waterbed for a week until the mother noticed the
odor.
You know,
yeah,
odor.
The aroma. Yeah.
And he also, you know, he was part of the neighborhood that was searching for this girl, and, you know, all along she was under his bed. I mean,
yeah. I think the neighbor was like 8 years old.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
I think it was an innocent thing. They were playing baseball or something, and she got hit in the eye, and then she wouldn't stop crying, and he was afraid he was going to get in trouble, so then he, you know, made her stop crying. And
yeah, absolutely. And this was a while ago. I'm going to look him up because yes. his name was Joshua Earl Patrick Phillips. I wonder if he's out of prison.
I don't know. I thought he was there forever.
Well, no, he's 14. They don't do that. I don't
think. But I thought they...
Yeah, okay, all right. So they gave him life sentence and it got upheld. So I wonder if he is he out. Sentenced to 40 years and 6 months. All right.
Oh. And this happened like in the late 90s. So
yeah,
like around
90s. Yeah. So, yeah. Kid was born in 1984. Oh, my God.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, absolutely. So, but I still wonder, because I'm sure everybody's always appealing everything. What's the latest on this case? You know, one of the things is the Supreme Court had ruled that children are not qualified for mandatory life. But what if they tried
as an adult?
Yeah, right, exactly. But I don't think a 14-year is. But the judges could individually sentence juvenile to life in prison after considering the circumstances. That's the way the thing came down. So, yeah, I guess they could. So he's now 33 years old. All right. When this particular article was written, which was 2019. So he's older than that now. He's in his upper 30s. And he said he regretted what he'd done at 14. He didn't understand what he was doing. Apparently,
hard to believe, though, right?
He has the opportunity to have his sentence reviewed after 25 years. And the appellate court upheld that and said that the life sentence will be reviewed again and could be modified at a 25-year review based on demonstrated maturity and rehabilitation. Well, that's interesting, because that would mean that was last year. 2020. Yeah. So what happened? All right. I'll keep looking. Maybe we'll.
Well, I suppose if the Menendez brothers walk the earth again.
Yeah. Yeah. The Menendi, as I used to like to call them. But whatever happened with them? I know they were trying to appeal that. Are they still trying to appeal that?
Yes. Okay. I believe this June.
Okay.
Is when the sentence is going to come down. Whether I think the parole board has it.
Okay.
And then whatever they say, it goes to governor, I guess. So there's still a possibility.
All right. Well, that's interesting. I know I had read somewhere where they were reviewing that and all that. Yeah, Lyle and Eric. Yeah, there's the dynamic duo.
What do you think about that? Do you think they should?
You know,
I
tell you, I hesitate to comment because there are so many things that came out in this case that I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, if there was abuse, that's a factor. But was there, you know, I would not be in a position to weigh in. I just don't know. Meanwhile, I know Eric got married. So I see. I read the tabloids. His wife was Tammy, and I don't know why. But they have a lack of conjugal visits. I believe that was either the Examiner or the Inquirer that told me that.
I'm sure she's hoping he gets out. But I've watched a lot about documentaries and things, and it's really. You know, it's mixed feelings.
It
really.
Absolutely.
But nobody knows if they were really abused or not.
Well, that's where I would assume somebody and a group of people could do enough of an investigation to have a good idea. You know, I won't be the armchair jury on that. But I think that it's complex. When it first happened, I remember so well because I was in Southern California at the time. Actually, I was in Denver, but I was just going back to LA. But in any event, deal was that people there initially were fully convinced that they did it for money, that it was just they were, you know, rotten kids who did it for money. And then little by little, more stories started to come out. And then there was sort of like, I don't know.
Well, now their entire family is for
release
getting out.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So. It's hard to say. Just such a shame that things come to this point anyway. If there was abuse and all that, somebody in their circle knew and didn't speak up. You know, and I don't know how you do speak up in those kind of things, but
well,
I don't.
I think a cousin or something, Eric told the cousin and the cousin, but that was all brought out in the first trial, I thought. Which was a hung jury. And then when they retried him, that wasn't allowed to be well, part of the and trial that, again. So.
Yeah, and that's something that has never made me easy, too. I always have thought that the rules of evidence and the rules of court are kind of like a Milton Bradley game, you know? And I used to be an expert witness in California in broadcast cases, and it would boggle my mind what wasn't allowed and then also what was. You know, I mean, it really was. Right. I said, oh, this is like Parker Brothers here. You know, unfortunately, you're dealing with lives. So,
that's right.
Yeah, that's a job I wouldn't want. But no. Yeah, so I guess we'll so they made their pleadings and now we're going to hear later if they're paroled.
Yeah.
Okay.
In June. They just had a special on a couple days ago that I watched, and it's at the end it said that June of 2025 is when the
So they'll meet on in June, and then that means the brothers would have to appear before them, and they'll state their case, and then the parole board will go do something.
The governor can overturn whatever decision they make. Anyway,
well, depending on who's governor, who knows anymore? But yeah,
true.
It'll be interesting. So I'll make you my official Menendi watcher. You can let me know.
Okay, I'll take that.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay,
all
right,
bye-bye.
Good deal. Yes, indeed. 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, I guess I should start watching TV. Or not. All right, I'm a fully confirmed radio gal, and that's why I love talking about the Sea Crane Company. And if you are a radio fan, I know that you're aware of them. But if for some reason the website has missed your perusal, ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com. And that's where you'll see all the wonderful CC radios, because everyone there has one thing in common. They all have just tremendous reception, AM and FM, things that your average radio don't even, you know, indicate. Or there, you'll come in on that on those CC radios. Now, the signal's got to be above your head. It's not going to do magic, but if anything can pick up that signal, these radios will. And there are so many from which to choose with so many neat features, and one of them is the CC Skywave SSB2. And that is just a wonder because, of course, single sideband radio. Common emergencies, they may not be doing much with that anymore. But I'll tell you what, when something big hits the fan and there's no other mean of communication, this may be the only thing you will hear. It's hard to say. In the meantime, when it's not that bad, hearing hams jaw back and forth is a lot of fun. But this radio is, the ultimate survival companion, as it were. It will fit in the palm of your hand. It weighs only 8 ounces, and the audio for its size, amazingly sharp and clear, and you will get things that certainly you're not going to get on your smartphone. It's a digital readout. It's got a lighted dial and a clock and an alarm and timer and lots of presets, and that's all fun. And it also has, of course, the weather band and a weather channel and all those things, but SSB2 makes it really neat, and it's extensive and accurate band coverage, so makes it a wonderful travel radio as well. So fine tuning, you betcha. And by the way, hidden truth, it also covers the civilian aviation VHF band. That's right, with 10 aviation memories that can continuously scan for activities. So you want to see what air traffic control has to say? Well, a lot of that's on VHF. All right, so you got a rotary volume dial, but other than that, everything's digital, and it's really neat. It's got a headphone jack and a clock and an alarm and a timer. 400 memory presets, right, adjustable squelch, and it's just a terrific little radio. And included is the CC wire terminal antenna adapter for shortwave and a portable 23-foot CC shortwave reel antenna. The original CC earbuds, which, man, oh, man, I say that the speaker sounds good, but it'll sound incredible when you use the CC earbuds. And a little fake leather carrying case. Yeah, it's just a great little radio. You can go to ccradio.com anytime, see it, read all about it, find out more, ccradio.com. If you can't go online, all is not lost because they have the best customer service. Call them, 800-522-8863. 800-522-TUNE. They'll answer all your questions. They'll put a catalog in the mail free if you want to see the catalog, and you should. And you can order online. So that's one thing. Now, by the way, I talk about single sideband. If you're saying, I don't know a thing about it, go to ccradio.com, and SSB-info will give you all sorts of things. You'll get to know all sorts of neat things about single sideband, and that's the deal. So the CC Skywave SSB2, you tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio.
my car. But when I met that little girl, I knew that I would fall for a little fool. Oh yeah, I was a fool. Carefree devil eyes. She'd hold me close and kiss me, but her heart was full of lies. Poor little fool. Oh yeah, I was a fool.
Poor little fool. I was a fool. Oh yeah.
She told me how she cared for me and that we'd never part. And so for the very first time, I gave away my heart, poor little fool. Oh yeah, I was a fool.
Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Of course, that's Ricky Nelson. It was Ruth and Gurney who wanted to hear that. And Ricky Nelson on Imperial in 1958. And Sharon Shealy wrote it. It's actually Elvis who encouraged Sharon to write. She met him when she was 15. And she of course, wound up on that car crash. And, yeah, her boyfriend at the time in Great Britain, who was, why can't I think of his name? Big star, momentarily. Eddie Cochran. There you go. All right. So yeah, she was riding along with him, and sadly he didn't make it. But anyway, Sharon Shealy wrote it, and of course Ricky Nelson recorded it, and so the rest was history. I think she wrote it when she had dated Don Everly, and they broke up, and she was disappointed. So she wrote it, and she gave it to Ricky Nelson. Her version was a little faster than his, but he recorded it, and the rest was history. So indeed, and yeah, Lou Chud and Imperial rushed that single out. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. Right after the news, we're going to talk to Eduardo in Tampa and Dave in Muskegon and Cindy in Chicago and Floyd in Iowa. All right, so all sorts of things and more of your requests coming up too. All right, so I think that pretty much is it. Full shows all this week, by the way, tonight, Wednesday and Thursday night. We start at 10 Central Time and talk about whatever's on your mind, as long as it has absolutely no import whatsoever. That is, yes, that's right. So let's see. Do you know the Fleetwood's covered Poor Little Fool? Oh, that was painful. Not as a single, but even as an album cut. What were they thinking? All right, we'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio.
I still remember when I first met you. I locked you in my heart. Darling, I still remember you.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Always makes me smile. That's the Romancers. Not the East L.A. Romancers, but the Romancers from the Bay Area that Bobby Freeman, a young Bobby Freeman, was in 1955. And that came out on Dootu. In fact, it was the first Dootu when Dootsie had to change his label from Dootone to Dootu because there was another Dootone. It wasn't a record label. I think they made Stylus or something. But anyhow, the deal is that Robert and Stickney wanted, I still remember, and he said the Cufflinks. And I thought, well, they could have. But then again, the Cufflinks. Now, this isn't, we're not talking later 60s like the Cufflinks that did Tracy, the White Boys. Never mind that. All right. There were, in the mid-50s, there were a minimum of three Cufflinkses. Yeah, I don't know what the Cufflink guy, I don't know. The first group, by the way, two out of the three came out of the service. But all of them wound up on Dootu, which was interesting. And that was a good story there. Around the same time that the Romancers were recording, I'll go over the Cufflinks some night, but it absolutely is a Venn diagram story, so to say the least. But for Robert and Stickney, I'm pretty sure you meant the Romancers. You'll let me know. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And Eduardo is in Tampa. What's going on tonight? Oh, by the way, congratulations on the gig.
Well, it's really not a big thing. It's only like a one-week assignment, and it's just like slicing up boxes because they are going to recycle them. It's not a big deal.
Okay, so you got a job slicing up boxes. Well, you know, that's actually good. You can get all your aggression out rather than have to kill a neighbor.
Right. It's good. It's good exercise if you're, working out. But tomorrow I'm going to go to I'm not going to be there. I'm going to be I'll do that on Thursday and Friday. But tomorrow I'm going to do career. There's companies going to be at Raymond James Stadium.
Okay.
So I'm going to go to that.
Okay.
And they actually have it tomorrow and Thursday, but I opted to do it Wednesday because tomorrow they have that Florida Blue with lunch.
Okay.
I mentioned that before.
Okay.
It's like every other Wednesday. So I'm going to take mom with me. For that.
So this is Career Bowl 2025.
Yeah, I don't know who's going to be there. I didn't actually go on the website to see who was there, but I'm just going to, be there with my resume, kind of dress it up and
all right.
See what happens.
All right.
It'd be nice to run into like Teresa from Tampa General. That would be nice.
Yes, that would, wouldn't it? All right.
Yeah.
So they do that every so often. I think they did one in February, but that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I'll tell you about it on Thursday.
Yes, and I'll look forward to hearing every word.
A couple other things. Guess what I got in the mail today?
What?
Remember I told you I do that call-in to over there with KFI where they do Name That Movie?
Yes.
And I run. Okay, so I finally got that. I got a cup.
Oh.
Later with Mo Kelly. That's who does the thing over there.
Okay.
It's got a nice picture of him with the name of his show.
Okay.
And I also got the keychain. It's a wooden keychain. It says later with Mo Kelly, and then the back it has the microphone icon.
Good.
Yeah, so that was very nice. Yes, I'm going to thank him when I get a chance.
Yeah, that's lovely. All right, so I think he does, 7 to 10 weeknights?
Yeah, and then Friday he does that in the final hour, Name That Movie, so people can call in and win stuff. So I managed to get that. So.
Well, very good.
I was wondering if I was going to get it.
Oh, yeah. No, they're better than me. They'll send them out on time. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you'd get something.
Well, you guys ain't that far apart. I mean.
Yeah. No, we are. But, yeah, they'll send stuff. Yeah. I remember, of course, I didn't win it as a prize. I was actually on the air there. But they gave me a very nice sweater years ago, and I still have it. So.
Oh, from KFI?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But it's now 43 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And it still holds up. All right. Yes, it says on it.
Well, I'm glad the basketball's over in...
Yeah. Yeah, good.
Yeah, for sure. So.
All right.
Yeah.
So things are going well.
And, Oh, and I got a comment. Did you see that thing where the parachutist got stuck in the stadium roof in France?
Oh, no, I didn't. Oh, no.
Yeah. So he flew in. He was getting the ball. It was like for a rugby game, and his parachute got stuck on the roof, and they had to He was up there for, I think, 40 minutes, and they had to get him up there, and but he was okay.
Here we go. Captain Yannick Trulet had the match ball on him when he got stuck in the upper awning of the stadium after parachuting down to the game. Well,
That's it.
I'm sure it ruined his otherwise dramatic entrance, but hey, at least he got stuck on something that, rather than hit the ground running, he lived. So I'm sure there's a lot of video of him dangling on the roof. All right.
Yeah, some of those they don't turn out so good.
No, they don't. That's what I mean.
Like the air shows.
He's doing just fine. Yeah, maybe a little embarrassed, but just fine. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good, good. So, so obviously they had entertainment there at the French Stadium. Yes.
Yeah, for the barbecue game. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Good deal. Well, good to hear from you. Let me know how a career bowl goes.
Yeah, Thursday how that went at the RBK Stadium. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate
it. Okay. Thank you, Riley. Have
All
a good
right.
night.
So 888-876-5593 is 8888-RALEIGH. And Floyd is in Iowa. Hello, Floyd. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Well, Rolly, that bit I heard you talking about earlier, that those pills and the foreign substance, I'll just bet you they came out of India. Because I know that earlier there was some eye drops came out of India
right.
was causing people to go blind.
No, I'm aware of that. And that India does have a robust generic pharmaceutical industry, but China does as well, all over the place. So I've been trying to go through the list that that David Jennings gave me. We'll see where they all are.
Yeah, those guys could be. And I didn't know Tel Aviv had one. But you know the thing that caught me, you were talking about earlier? I didn't know you knew Art Bell.
Well, yeah. I was his designated replacement before I walked.
Oh, my goodness gracious. And that guy, I didn't even know this show was on because I'd be at work or asleep. Mm. And a coworker told me about it. I heard that a couple of times, and he put a song on by Waylon Jennings, Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson, I think Kris Kristofferson, they're called the Highwaymen.
Right, of course.
He said that this is not like any country music song he'd ever heard. I heard. I said, "That's not country. That's good."
Yeah. Well, why would you think that country wasn't good?
Well, because every time I heard it, it's always the same old slow. Isn't always the same.
I would disagree with that completely. I think the most clever lyrics come out of country.
Sometimes that's what I found out as soon as I started to listen to it. There's Western, like Ghost Riders in the Sky. I find out that is not country. That's Western.
Well,
originally
they were separate. Western swing, of course, Bob Wills and stuff like that, very different. But country went through a lot of different stages. And in the latter 60s, they called it countrypolitan, I'm sorry to say. But the problem is it was sort of a love-hate relationship on Music Row because on the one hand, the country artists wanted to keep country pure and all that. But here is the difference. If you have a number one country album and a number one pop album, the number one pop album sells a million units. The number one country album sells 20,000. You see, so they wanted a crossover. And with singles, in a number one country single, they would sell 100,000 units, but 80,000 of them went to jukeboxes. So you didn't have the dollars. And so, of course, they all wanted to go after the dollars, but none of them really wanted to go after everything that came with mainstream. So it was always sort of a real love-hate approach avoidance kind of relationship.
But, you know, Ronnie, when I hear something, if I like it, I like it. But I was in the Cub Scouts, and one of the guys there talked about a group called the Moody Blues. I'd never heard of them. They had a song called "I'm Just a Singer in a Rock and Roll Band." I didn't care what they were, who they were. I liked that song.
Yeah.
And then this George Jones, he had that. What was it? Did he write that thing about the race is on? Looks like
pride in
the back stretch.
No. But he certainly recorded it. He did not write it. And of course, the pop hit was Jack Jones.
And then somebody speeded it up. Was it Billy Ray Cyrus, someone here not long ago? I heard it speeded up because I used to hear it on the radio all the time with George Jones singing it. But that when he speeded that up, I thought that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, the writer of that was a guy named Don Rollins. But the original was George Jones, like I say, 64, then Jack Jones in 65, who had the pop hit. And then everybody from Dave Edmonds to Conway Twitty. I mean, there are probably 70 different people who recorded The Race Is On.
And let me tell you something else right quick, too. I remember Art Bell talked about, and you do, too, that Sea Crane Radio. He would always talk about that.
Oh, of course.
And then, like you said, this George Norrie, he never mentions it.
Well,
I never hear him mention it.
Well, no, he probably still does the commercials, but they're, you know, unfortunately, George Norrie, what can I say? All right. Actually, I'm going to break for news here in a moment.
Okay.
All right.
Good to hear your show, Raleigh.
Likewise. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. All right. So, maybe we'll get one of those Races On versions. I don't know. Or Annette Funicello did a version. No, I'll spare you. Your calls are coming up. We got Cindy. We got Laura. We got Robert. We got Floyd. Oh, Robert can tell us whether it was the Romancers or not that he wanted. And all that and more is coming up on WGN Radio.
Oh, come back, baby. Oh, mama, please don't go, yeah. Cause the way I love you, child, you never know. Oh, come back, baby. Yeah, yeah, let's talk it over. Oh, one more time.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. That is Ray Charles. You know, I think I played that earlier, and it's a request, and that was Billy Bob in Bourbonnais wanted to hear it, but maybe I didn't because it's still on the list, so there it was. That was from the Ray Charles album on Atlantic in 1957 that we affectionately call Rock and Roll, but the actual title was Ray Charles. All right, so we'll be back with your calls coming up in moments here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Well, you request them, I play them. And if you're saying, who is that? It's the Beatles, early Beatles. And that was not released in the U.S. or U.K. It was released in Germany and a few other places on Amiga Records in 1964 called Cry for a Shadow. And it was Jeffrey and Alsop who requested that we play it. And now we have. All right, so 888-876-5593. Billy Bob in Bourbonnais, what's up tonight?
Hey, 28th time caller.
There you are.
I wanted to call and say thank you for playing Ray Charles' request for me.
Sure. My pleasure.
And then the other night when I requested a wall of sound with Phil Spector, it didn't sound like he was exactly enamored with the Righteous Brother.
I'm going to play it. I'm going to play it.
Now, wait a second.
I've already got it down here. Ready, got it ready.
No, I'm going to change it, though, because you said before that air you like some of that music. I'd like to change my request for you to play something that you like so I could see what I've been missing.
Oh, well, do you know Pretty Little Angel Eyes?
Yeah, that was Pretty Little Angel.
That's early Phil Spector.
Oh, you can change it to that one then if you want.
Yeah, I like that. Or Under the Moon of Love. Do you remember that? His follow up.
Yeah, well, I just never realized that Phil Spector did that.
Oh yeah, he also did Nag by the Halos.
Or else, if you don't want to do one of them, do Bo Diddley by Bo Diddley. It'd be all right, too.
All right. Well, I will be happy to play you some Curtis Lee. And I do have the Righteous Brothers queued up, so you'll hear them, the 45 version on Phyllis.
Well, you don't have to, but if you want, I appreciate it.
All
have
right.
a good evening.
You too. Thanks for calling. Appreciate that. So 888-876-5593. But yeah, that early stuff, like Pretty Little Angel Eyes, I thought that was just magnificent. And then he went bad. Well, no, a lot of people loved the wall of sound. I just wasn't one of them. Cindy in Chicago, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yes, I thought it was a good song. I forgot about it, but now I remember. It's a pretty good, it's a real good song. The song, It Must Be Raindrops.
Raindrops, you're talking about Dee Clark?
The one, It must be raindrops for a man's not supposed to cry.
Yeah, right. That's Dee Clark. Sure.
Yeah, but then anyhow, I called about the first thing I want to say is I think your listeners would like channel 62. Well, it's antenna TV because I don't have cable. Antenna TV 62.4, I think it is. It's country station where they play the country video, like music videos, and play the country music. It's really good.
All right.
I forgot about this. But then anyhow, I called about the Johnsonville Brat recall. Yeah, I guess it was Claire.
Over 22,000 pounds recalled. A foreign material it is. A foreign material.
Where would that ever
Manufacturing. And they're saying pieces of plastic. There's a lot of ways that could have happened. Most of these assembly lines are automated for one thing, but it can happen. Now, the sad part is that the way they knew it is they got complaints from customers who found hard plastic material in their bratwurst. And there are no confirmed injuries, although just reading that makes you sick. All right, so apparently ones to watch out for are Johnsonville Brat's Cheddar Bratwurst.
And then I don't want to talk about it tonight, but I'm not up to it. But Chuck was friends with, I don't know what his last name is. His name was Carl. He had a real long Italian last name, and he was the manager of the Buckingham.
Okay.
And I don't know if he's still living. I mean, I tried to write him a letter that Chuck passed away. They were friends, and I don't know if he's still living. I never knew. I wrote the letter, never heard anything.
I don't know. I thought that their manager was Jimmy Gersio, and as far as that goes. Absolutely. In fact, I just got a CD from Jim Holvey, who wrote all that that stuff. So I should probably ask him, whatever. So you're probably talking about the guy who I think was their first manager was Carl Bonafide. Fidi, however you say that.
Yeah,
Bonafide.
Long.
Yeah. Well, it's not that long. It's Bonafede. It's not that long.
Oh, he wrote a book.
Well, there you go.
But then anyhow, the other drug company that makes a lot of generic drugs is Mylan Drug Company, and I don't even know. I haven't followed their company since they discontinued. This was a scandal about 5 years ago, maybe it is, where they discontinued purposefully about 200, 250 generic medicines to purposefully put them in shortage to jack up the price, and 48 attorneys generals of 48 states sued them over Medicare and Medicaid.
Oh. Whatever. I was looking up the list that that we heard, and the first three were Indian, as far as that goes. I'm still looking at them all, but yeah, I think that if you are taking a generic, you have the right to at least ask the pharmacy who made this, and then you can do as you desire. All right.
I don't know.
Well, very good.
I think, you know, a lot of times with companies, it's the lowest common denominator.
All right. You've ended the hour. We'll talk to you later, Cindy. Thank you.
Pretty little angel eyes. Pretty little angel eyes. Pretty little angel, pretty little angel, pretty little, pretty little, pretty little angel. Pretty little angel eyes.
Angel eyes, I really love you so. Angel eyes, I'll never let you go. Because I love you, my darling angel eyes.
Pretty, pretty, pretty little angel eyes.
Angel eyes, you are so good to me. And when I'm in your arms, you feel so heavenly.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. The John just came in, wanted to know, Curtis Lee, is that New York or L.A.? I said, well, it's Yuma if you get right down to it. We've been to his gravesite. Yes, indeed. So on the Dunes label. And so that's early Phil Spector. And truly wonderful, I thought. Yeah. Now we could get earlier, but I think I'd rather not. All right. So 888-876-5593. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. And Isaac is on the south side. It's been a while. What's up, Isaac?
Hi, Raleigh. How's it going?
All right. How about yourself?
It's going well. Back in February, I know I told you my grandmother was sick. Well, she made her, you know, final transition at the beginning of February. So I've kind of been, you know, preoccupied with that and getting back to my regularly scheduled program. Now it's just she and her, it's just me and her mom, my great grandmother at 94 years old.
Wow.
So I'm her caregiver, yes. And she's in really good, really good shape. You know, when I listen to other people, she doesn't have Alzheimer's. She can see and hear. She can't walk, but she, you know, has all her faculties other than that. So I'm blessed on that part. So I was actually calling because we did speak some week. I think it was a couple. I don't know when it was, but it was a short taping that you had. And we were talking about Johnny Rivers, but you didn't have a lot of time to go into him. And we also started a conversation about, I asked you, because they said Johnny Rivers, he should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, that he's blue-eyed soul, that he, to me, he sounded country. And he has recorded a couple of songs that I recognize sung by, you know, black singers, Motown and stuff like that. And so I'd ask you, when Blue-Eyed Soul and white performers did these songs, did they perform them with malicious intent? Did they
no.
Were they trying to take these songs
no.
from, or
no.
were they just singing a song?
Well, and you're going through several periods of time, and so let's go back long before Johnny Rivers was known to anybody. In the 50s, when you were starting to see all those covers of great R&B songs. Well, I mentioned this before. One of the guys who did a lot of those was the guy who owned Dot Records. And he also owned a little record shop in Gallatin, Tennessee, Randy's Record Shop. And he's the guy who sponsored all the R&B on WLAC. And what he saw was that general market radio and all that were not going to play these quote-unquote race records back then. And so what he did was he found himself some, Pat Boone, perfect example, cleaned him up and had him cover Little Richard or whoever and have hits. Now, he wasn't being in any way malicious. And, of course, if you ask Little Richard, he said, what, are you kidding? I wrote these songs. Yes, I want him to cover, as far as that goes. Okay. Now, sadly, Little Richard was signed to Specialty Records, and his publisher was Art Roop, and Art was not great at giving him the royalties, but Randy Wood was great at paying them, as far as that goes. So it really in no way was malicious intent. It was a way to get to a bigger market that just, wouldn't play the songs. They should have. They should have played the chords, not the crew cuts, but that's not the way life was. Now, by the time you get to the 60s, there's really, certainly in rock and roll, really no reason that you couldn't play original songs, and usually you did. When Johnny Rivers would cover something, usually that was not a hit at the time. He would cover it much later. Now, it's interesting that a couple of years later, he covered Mountain of Love, and that originally was not an R&B singer, but the guy who did it originally was Harold Dorman, that nobody's ever heard of. Everybody thought that Harold Dorman sounded just like Johnny Rivers, so when Johnny Rivers covered it, it didn't matter. But sure, he's covering, say, Baby I Need Your Lovin', but this is years later, not at the time that the Four Tops are having it as a hit.
Okay.
Yeah, so it certainly wasn't taking away from them in any way. But, Johnny Rivers was Johnny Ramostella. He was originally from New York. His family moved to Baton Rouge, and that's where he grew up. And, in fact, while he was in junior high, he was playing with a band called The Rockets. And, actually, Dick Holler was the leader of The Rockets. And that song means nothing to you, but he's the guy who did both Snoopy and the Red Baron and Abraham Martin and John. He wrote both of those.
Oh, wow.
So that tells you what his depth was, a wide range of things. And so when he was still Johnny Ramostella, he formed the Spades and made his first record when he was 14 years old in junior high. And, on these little labels that meant nothing. But in 1958, he traveled to New York because he was from New York originally. And while he was there, he met Alan Freed. And Alan Freed said, Johnny Ramostella, change your name to Johnny Rivers. And he was thinking it because of the Mississippi River flowing through Baton Rouge and all that. And so he said, okay. And so initially he wrote some stuff. He released some stuff that was done by other people that went absolutely nowhere as far as that goes. But he began to tour through the South. And, you mentioned country. Yeah, he'd open for like Brother Dave Gardner, who was kind of a country comedian and all that. But while he was in Birmingham, he met Audrey Williams, who was Hank Williams' wife. And she is the one who said, you should move to Nashville and you should write songs. And so he did. And he actually was working alongside Roger Miller. And so at the time, he thought, well, I'll never make it as a singer, so I'll just write songs. And so then he started to meet a lot of people. And in fact, James Burton, who was the guitarist in Ricky Nelson's band, heard his stuff and got Ricky Nelson to record it, which is nice. And so suddenly he's getting the interest of big people, and he's doing some stuff as a studio musician. And he goes to L.A., and he gets a job filling in at Gazzari's, which was on the Hollywood Strip back then on Sunset Boulevard, and a jazz combo couldn't make it or something. And so he shows up, and they do well. Well, while he's there, the guy who owned the Whiskey A Go-Go, gave him a one-year contract. And now, by the way, this is no big thing because the whiskey had been in business less than a week. All right. And so the owner of this is just looking for anybody. And, you know, and this also was an interesting thing because this was 64. It was right around the time the Beatles were just starting to chart, you know. So it's like, oh, God, you know, every British invasion group is going to knock me out of what am I going to do? And so, you know, he says to Johnny, I'll give you a 1-year deal. And so he did well. And so, you know, and also the whiskey, you know, located very well right on Sunset Strip. And so, yeah, Lou Adler, you know, the record producer, hears him and issues Johnny Rivers Live at the Whiskey A Go-Go. That was a hit album. And that song contained his remake of Memphis. And they released that as a single, and that thing sold over 1 million copies. And so, you know, it was... it was just really a hit. And so it was sort of magical. And he continued, you know, it was really weird because on the one hand on the strip, you had all that folk music stuff and you also had blues and, you know, you had everything. And so, like I say, he did Mountain of Love, which became a big hit by him. And then Midnight Special and Seventh Son, which was written by Willie Dixon, I think. And, but then he also did stuff that, you know, Pete Seeger would have written, that kind of stuff. And so, he was working with Steve Barry, and Steve Barry and P.F. Sloan were a couple writers in L.A., and they had the job. They had the theme song for the American broadcast of this British television show called Danger Man. Well, that becomes Secret Agent Man, see?
Okay.
All right. And so, of course, you know, that sells 1 million copies and yeah. all of that kind of stuff. And so, you know, he, in A Poor Side of Town, he wrote that and co-produced it. So, but that's when he started Soul City. And I mentioned to you when we last talked, I liked him because he started a record label, Soul City, and that had, well, one of my all-time favorite records, Who Could Be Loving You, the first Al Wilson record, that was on Soul City, just terrific, and he signed the Fifth Dimension originally, and he's the person who gave Jimmy Webb really his first break, you know, with Up, Up, and Away and all that, and all that kind of stuff, and
When did his career start to wane down in terms of music and pick up in the with the record label?
Well, the record label, by the way, didn't last forever at that point. You know, this was really late 60s kind of stuff. But in the 70s, he was sort of doing all right in the early 70s. But by the latter 70s, I think the last thing he really charted in the top 10 with was Sway Into the Music, you know, Slow Dancing, Sway Into the Music. Yeah, which was originally released by the Funky Kings. But yeah. And he did a version of Major Lance's which they called Curious Mind, probably a good move. Curtis Mayfield never should have called it, but anyhow, he did. And so, you know, and of course, the title of Midnight Special, of course. And so he continued, but I'd say the 80s were nothing by at all. That in the late 90s, he reactivated Soul City. I don't know what happened with that, you know, but... that's pretty much it. So I would say 77 was it for pop records.
Okay. Does he deserve to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Well, that's an interesting question. Who does and who doesn't? I think there's a ton of people who deserve to be in it. Like, for instance, how could Neil Sedaka not be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? It's insane. Because, you see, but the people who run the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame are too hip for the room. And so look at how long it took to get so many groups in there. You know, some of the members...
Yeah, and they have moved on to hip-hop now. They're not
right.
Even...
Right, exactly. But so they have a real disdain, like, for the pre-Beatles popularic that they call formulaic records. But, you know, that Brill Building stuff was just tremendous at the time. And so all those people should be in there, but they're not. So should Johnny Rivers be in there? Well, sure, why not? Certainly ahead of a lot of people who they put in there who really were not rock and roll acts ever. You know, but so I don't pay the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame any mind, tell you the truth.
One last question, and this is about, I'm just want to throw out this other name. tell me what you know. Morris Levy?
Morris Levy, Moish. I'll get to Moish. But let me say one more thing about Johnny Rivers. You know, rarely do I like a cover of anything, right? But this is really hard to believe. But, you know, Huey Piano Smith did Rockin' Pneumonia and the Boogie Woogie Flu. It's a wonderful record on Ace. But I think Johnny Rivers nailed that in 19...
Say the name of the song again.
Rockin' Pneumonia and the Boogie Woogie Flu.
Okay, Rockin' Pneumonia.
If you've never heard it, I'll play both versions for you.
Okay,
and,
okay,
so you can hear it. But, you know, I rarely say that, but I think that, you know, and I have a real soft spot for Huey Piano Smith. Huey didn't sing. His singer was actually Bobby Marchand, but that's another story. But anyhow, I think the production on Johnny Rivers just blew Huey Smith out of the water. But you'll have to tell me. I'll play you both. And you were asking me something else. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I was reading about Frankie Lyman, and actually the name Moishe was is
no,
it Moishe.
No, Moish is a Yiddish nickname for Morris Moish.
Right. That I was looking up that name, what is it that Levy came up?
Yeah, well, that's his last name, Moish Levy. Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Man.
And
yeah.
So yeah, I just wanted to hear what you have to say, and in fact, I can get off the phone and you. You know,
well, that thing would be a whole show, and I think I've done this before, but, you know, you can start with Birdland and Moishe's brother getting killed in front of it and all that. But anyhow, Roulette, oh, my God, we could talk forever, you know. And
let me ask this. Is he still is his family still benefiting?
Not really.
Okay.
And his son actually was in the news about a decade ago. His son, he used to play tennis in high school. I forget the kid's name. I can see his face like it's yesterday. But anyway, he went to law school, became a lawyer. And why can't I think of his name? Levy, obviously, is his last name. But anyhow, he wound up being the attorney for some New Jersey township that was going to open some marijuana dispensary, and they wouldn't give it to them because he was the attorney. And so that company wanted him to step down as attorney, and he wouldn't do it. And that's the last I heard. And man, his name's on the tip of my tongue. I can't think of it. I will. Anyway, but one of the things he benefited from was that every time poor George Goldner would be in debt to the mob for gambling debts, Moish would bail him out, pay the money, and then he'd own the record label at the time. So that's how you mentioned Frankie Lyman. That's how, of course, they wind up getting Frankie Lyman. They get Rama, they get G, they get Gone, they get End, they get Tico, you know. So this is all because George Goldner could not stop gambling. And so, it was really sad because George was the real deal. He was the only 40-year-old Jewish man who had 13-year-old teenage ears. He could recognize a hit anywhere. And he was just terrific. I couldn't say enough things. And his daughter, Bonnie, was in the record business for a while working for RCA. But anyway, she then went and sold real estate in New York or something. Moish is a whole story. And, yeah, you can go from Birdland to Strawberries and everything in between.
All right. Well, I'm glad that you brought it up. Thank you so much, Robert.
All right.
Yeah,
I will play both versions, and you'll have to weigh in and tell me what you think.
Okay.
Okay,
thank you. Bye.
All right. Good deal. So 888-876-5593-8888 Raleigh. So let me see if I can find this, and then we'll get back to your calls, I promise. I really will, but this is serious stuff here. If I could only spell R-O-C-K-I-N-P-N-E-U. That should be enough. All right. So now, Huey Piano Smith and the Clowns. Good, I found that. All right, and let's see what else we can find. And Johnny Rivers. All right, and John says, before I do anything, I should make money for the radio station. I can do that. And then we'll come back with Huey Piano Smith, and we'll go right into Johnny Rivers, and we'll see what you think coming up on WGN Radio.
But the gal too tall. Young man, rhythm down.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and I do love it, love it, love it, love it, because it just screams New Orleans, Huey Piano Smith. And I mentioned that Bobby Marchand is his lead singer, but not on this. On this particular record, that is Huey Piano Smith himself singing, along with his barber. I'm not making this up. Sidney Rayfield was his barber. Anyway, and there was another kid on it as well, but it was just terrific, I thought. But when the Johnny Rivers version came out, more than a decade later, the production on it just made it wonderful. Play the rest of it, but we got the news coming up. And that, by the way, as I say, I love the Huey Piano Smith because it's so New Orleans, but that was as L.A. as it get. It was done at United Western, which was a studio at Sunset and Gower, and Larry Nechtel was on piano. I don't know who else was on it, but anyhow, that's the deal. Which one do you like better, Huey Piano Smith or Johnny Rivers? All that and more coming up on WGN Radio.
So many raindrops, it feels like raindrops falling from my eyes, falling from my eyes. Since my love has left me, I'm so all alone. I would bring her back to me, but I don't know where she's gone. I don't know where she's gone. There must be a cloud in my head. Rain keeps falling from my eyes. Oh no, it can't be teardrops, for a man ain't supposed to cry. So it must be raindrops. So many raindrops. Feels like raindrops falling from my eyes.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yes, 1961 on VJ, D. Clark and Raindrops, and that was Cindy's request, and very happy to play it. All right, so 888-876-5593. Now, by the way, if you were listening about an hour and a half ago, David Jennings was kind enough to give me all the generics for Effexor, because that was the drug in question, that where the metal was found anyway. So there are 16 generics. 9 of them are in India, 1 is in China, 1 is in Canada, 1 is in Tel Aviv, and 4 are in the USA. Now, in fairness, the Tel Aviv company also has offices in the USA. But that's the list, 9 in India. All right, so, yeah, for whatever that means, at least for once I followed through and on something I said I would do. All right, so I'm not sure what's going on here, but Steve is in Western Springs. It just says Cher and Gordon McClendon. Not together. What are we talking about here, Steve?
Raleigh, the problem is, it's always a treat and a privilege to talk to you. since John took my call and put me on hold. You covered so many things. You're playing to two of your power alleys. Your power alleys are radio and classic rock. Correct me if you think I'm wrong.
Well, I wouldn't call it classic rock, but yes, yes, obscure oldies. Let's go there.
So let me real quick drop in a few bonus upfront notes.
Okay.
The piano player in Johnny Rivers' Rockin' Pneumonia, Larry
Knechtel.
He was a Wrecking Crew guy, right?
Well, yes, but the Wrecking Crew is posthumous. Oh, man, isn't that the big fight? But that was Hal Blaine coined that phrase. But when they were actually recording those records, they weren't known as that.
The only reason, when you mentioned his name, I'm a huge Doors fan.
Yeah.
He, in several Doors books, it says he supplemented keyboards on their first album.
Okay.
And given no credit.
Right.
I was just very surprised because I always thought they were a very self-contained foursome.
Well, you get into the studio, and believe me, it's more than four. Let's just say that.
Right. But back then, when I'm a 14-year-old kid buying their first album, I want to believe it's four.
Well, and that's as well you should, absolutely. But in the studio, believe me, it's more than four.
I also know you don't want to go long tonight on Morris Levy.
I'd love to do that some night. I have talked about him before, but that's a whole show.
Yes, but a tiny note, and I'm betting you're aware of this. Tommy James released his autobiography about
five
or 6 years ago.
Right, exactly.
Did you read it?
I didn't read it, but I had him on when he did, actually. I think I was still on XM at the time. And I told him some stories he didn't know. I mean, it was no surprise to me why he wound up on Roulette.
Right.
And
but the only thing that the thing that surprised me about his book was how kind he was to Levy.
Well, Levy,
even though it wasn't quite clear.
Levy was pretty kind to him. You know, Levy had two sides. Levy could be the most delightful person you've ever met. I mean, it wasn't all one way. But again, the fascinating story there was, of course, the whole thing that was going on in Pittsburgh, unrelentlessly, I should say, with taking records that were flops, reproducing them, and selling the bootlegs. And that's how they wound up getting him. Normally, they would threaten to kill somebody who showed up, like Sir Raggedy Flagg. But in his case, they just said, you got to get a band. You're going on tour.
Do you think he was hooked into Dick Clark and all the Philadelphia labels?
That was a whole different thing. And believe me, Dick Clark's another one we could talk about forever. But no, the Pittsburgh thing was just a small deal as far as that goes. But they had connections. And they were just doing it locally. They never expected anybody to actually show up. And occasionally they would, and usually they'd threaten them. But in the case of Tommy James, they just said, you know, you're going to go on tour. He said, but I don't have a band. You know, we were in high school. We broke up. You know, we'll get a band. And so they did. That was it. But, you know, he went to New York, and he talked to a lot of labels. And I don't know if he talked about that in the book, but I think that he thought he was actually talking to a lot of labels. Oh, no, no. Moish called them all and said, that's my boy. And that was the end of that.
That was exactly the passage in the book.
Oh, yeah. It's true.
He did 2 days going around, and then the third morning he got a phone call saying, no, your label's been chosen.
That's right.
That's right.
And that was that insider Pittsburgh connection.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah.
The two formal questions that I mentioned to John.
Yeah.
Why did Cher turn down The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia?
She didn't. Sonny did. Cher wanted to do it. Sonny just hated it. He thought it was demeaning and that it wouldn't be reflective or good for her. And Snuff Garrett said, this is the record. And he said no.
That would have been about a year after Gypsy, Tramps, and Thieves.
It was in that same period of time, yes. And, of course, Snuff Garrett had produced that album and did some wonderful things on that album. I thought Miss Subway in 1952 was an absolute classic. And I Saw a Man Who Danced with His Wife was a great little ballad. You know, so I thought, of course, I thought Snuff Garrett hung the moon. So what can I say?
Don't you think it would have been an enormous hit?
Absolutely. But Sonny wouldn't hear of it.
And Vicki Lawrence was married to the guy who wrote it.
Yes, yes, in a horribly abusive relationship, I'm sorry to say.
It didn't last long.
Well, you know, how many times are you going to be beaten before you say, I'm out of here?
Right.
So I can say that now because, sadly, Bobby Russell's not alive.
Bobby Russell, that was the guy's name, because he also wrote Little Green Apple.
Oh, he did a lot of things, believe me. He did a lot of things. Didn't he write Honey?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, to right.
To this day, hearing that song makes me ill.
Well, and of course it makes you ill, but man, did it ever sell.
But what a thematic for a pop hit. A guy goes home and his wife has died.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the whole thing is that record was not just Bobby Goldsboro. There was a real weird thing on that, and I can't remember who it was, but somebody else, Bob Shane was involved with that. I'll have to go back and think of it, and so was Larry Butler. But this was a real weird thing. I think Bob Shane did it on somebody before. And I'll look this up to be more cogent about this, but I'm pretty sure he did. And then Bobby Goldsboro, they stepped in, and there were all sorts of label issues at the time. But yeah, there was somebody before, you know, hell, for all I know, it was the Kingston Trio. But I mean, it was somebody really odd.
Right. That's why when you said Bob Shane, I was going to say the Kingston Trio.
Right. Yeah, yeah. That's our Bob Shane. Right. Exactly. So, So that was part of the deal. So yeah, absolutely. But honey, man, sold a lot.
You want a quick, tough trivia question about Bob Shane?
Oh, I probably won't be able to answer it. Let's have it.
What is his connection to Barack Obama?
Oh no, you're kidding me.
You can look this up.
I can look it up. No, I don't want to look.
No, no, no. I'm not saying cheat.
Right.
No, I know.
I have absolutely no idea.
Years apart, they both attended and graduated from Punahou Academy.
Okay, all right.
Oahu.
All right.
Yes.
Good enough.
Raleigh, that doesn't qualify as trivia. That's obscuria.
Oh, no, that's absolutely fine. Yeah. You bet. I didn't
clearly
put that together. I knew he had been, they both had been in Hawaii, but how about that? All right, good deal. I like it.
My last question.
Yes.
In your travels as a radio star and personality, did you ever work for Gordon McClendon?
Never worked for him. Wish I would have. But Gordon was somewhat misogynistic, actually, and drank a whole lot. But I still respected the hell out of Gordon McClendon. But no, I was a Todd Storrs girl.
And wasn't Todd Storrs the first innovator of the top 40 format?
Yeah, absolutely. And the name came from New Orleans when they bought WTIX up at 1450 for $25,000. There was a station that was doing a top 20, and so they thought, well, we'll just do a top 40. That's where they got the name. But Todd was a very interesting story, and that goes back to when he bought KOWH from the Omaha World Herald with his dad. And there's a lot of stories there about how he happened to on it, but a big part of it had to do with news, and sometime I'll tell you that story.
Why did they choose 40? Why the
because it was double 20. 40. It was double 20. That's what I'm saying. Because it was, and they didn't play 40. That was always a myth. It was just a name. I think it was DSU, but I'm not sure. But the station in New Orleans was doing a top 20, and so they just doubled it.
And McClendon's killer station was in Dallas.
Yeah,
correct?
Well, in Oak Cliff. Yeah, KLIF, licensed to Oak Cliff. And if you ever drove on I-20 and saw those array, it's over a dozen towers to get that nighttime pattern, because it was a daytimer when they got it.
That's amazing. But then he owned stations across the country.
Yeah, well, before that, he had Liberty Broadcasting. You know, Gordon used to do baseball play-by-play recreations. And, hung the bat and had a hammer and all that stuff. So the old Scotsman. And, he came from some money. His father was Bart McClendon, who had been kind of a two-bit actor. But Bart owned all the drive-ins around Dallas. Well, of course, when he owned the drive-ins, that was the middle of nowhere. Well, that became Dallas. And so, of course, a lot of money in that. So, and then of course Gordon ran for Senate, joined the move to McClendon, but anyway, and on that
in
went.
1964 against Ralph Yarbrough.
Yeah, yeah, and I still have the jingles.
Were you down there then?
No,
Dallas?
No, I was not in Dallas. But that's the kind of thing where everybody got a copy of that. I've still got them on reel to reel, you know. And But no, Gordon did a lot of things, and the Texas Triangle and all that, you know, and of course Houston and all that. So yeah, a number of wonderful things, and a number of
Raleigh,
firsts.
Your knowledge, Your knowledge is amazing and encyclopedic, and thanks for having me on.
Always. I'm glad you called. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. So we can talk about the history of Top 40 some night. These are all interesting things, but they get into very, very long stories. So 888-876-5593 right here, and I'm probably going to run out of time, and I feel terrible about that already. So if I do, remember, I got 3 hours tomorrow night and Thursday night. Usually in the first hour, I'm half talking to myself. So call early. All right, and we'll see what we can get through now on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and we have about 8 minutes to go, so we're not about to have a bumper because we got a lot to say. Nick is in Baltimore. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Well, hey, Raleigh. Hey, thanks a lot for putting me on. Real quick, not a lot of time. I got a new toy.
Yeah?
And it's an internet radio. It's a new internet radio. It's got shortwave, AM, FM, the whole...
What is it?
Wazoo.
What is it?
It's that LC90 that Choi Young. Yeah, I know it's Chinese, but.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But absolutely. The mini multiband smart internet radio portable. Yes, yes, yes.
It's actually pretty decent. I mean, it's got a decent FM section.
Really?
The AM's kind of.
The AM, I don't know. But, the reason I've heard of this is some people are saying it'll be as revolutionary as the ICF 2010, the Sony radio. I don't know. Will it?
Yeah. Well, I like it, but so far I have to, they have a bunch of stations in there. I have to put some of the URLs in myself.
Of course.
And I have an Apple, so, you know, you can't right click. I don't know.
Yeah, you can. Sure. Just hold the shift key down while you're clicking.
Oh, on the iPad?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I assume it'll work on an iPad. It works. I'll get my iPad later and trade it, but I use it all the time on my laptops. No problem at all. The shift key.
Where's the shift key?
Like for capital letters, shift.
Oh, okay.
Now, the other thing is many of those, and like I say, I have iPads and all that crap, but I don't use them much. But usually there can be a setting where you can do a thing where you can have a right click by using two fingers. Look at your settings and see what you can set up.
Okay.
Yeah, because that option is available. But otherwise, shift and click. But of course, you know, I got a keyboard in front of me, which is not what you get on an iPad. But
okay.
You probably can set up the two click deal.
Well, I'll get out of here. I'll call you either tomorrow or
I hope you
Thursday.
Will. I hope you will, and we'll talk about this because I think it is the first radio to combine, shortwave with internet and everything else. So
it's pretty good. It's pretty selective. When you go to the AM, it shuts the internet thing down.
Yeah, and so, that's the thing. Like, FM and internet is going to be good, maybe even shortwave, but AM, I'd be more impressed if it had a great AM section.
It's kind of mediocre, but I hear GN, so.
Yay, we like that. All right, in the meantime, when I get off the air, I'm going to take a look. I'm going to pull out that iPad and try it. I'll find a way to get you to be able to right-click on it.
Okay, hey, thanks.
Okay, good. Talk to you tomorrow night. Okay, bye.
All right.
So 888-87. Why am I giving out the phone number? It doesn't matter if you dial it. You're not going to get in here. So let's see here. It's going to be real short tonight. You'll have to call me back tomorrow night. But we have Dave in Muskegon. All right. Let's start, Dave. Well, we don't have Dave anywhere. He left us. All right. So, that made it quicker. So with that in mind, Sherry in Naperville has a request. Okay. What's the request?
Oh, my request is I heard it this weekend. Ghost Riders in the Sky, number one, even though everybody did it, was by Vaughn Monroe.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's what you want to hear?
And I heard you played some country. The other thing is, the guy that follows you, and you should ask for a bigger percentage. Because he's doing CC Radio for Toronto.
That's good.
But he tells nothing about the products. Mm. And everybody asks you questions, and you answer them, and you go in detail.
I don't get anything from that. WGN gets the spot money, and that's just the way I want it to be. I don't expect anything from that.
Right.
I'm happy to promote Bob Crane for absolute free. In fact, I, for years, ran commercials on my radio stations at no charge for him.
I know you love them.
Yep, so that's
but
it.
But I just thought you should know.
Well,
because
all right.
Because he's like...
he's
calling up your
but he's
family.
Well, no, he's probably limited to 30 seconds or 60 seconds. See, I don't time anything.
Oh.
It's a whole different world. All right, we'll talk to you later. Thanks, Sherry. Appreciate it.
Love you.
All right.
Bye.
Yes. All right. So 8888. No, don't do it, Raleigh. See, that's memory. Yeah, there I'm like Pavlov's dog salivating at the tone. Ruth and Gurnee. So what's up, Ruth?
Hi, Raleigh.
Rockin' pneumonia and the boogie woogie flu.
Yeah, ammonia. The cleaning agent is better than a washing machine. And caregiver stories, I have much better ones than that one, but two of the best ones out of a lot.
I got 1 minute.
Ruth,
I got 1 minute. You know that tonight. I got 1 minute of time.
I know that. What I want to ask you is the question of, did you know the tea leaf reader that I know in New Orleans? Because when you picked Poor Little Fool, it was Libby Custer's birthday, and she not only directed me to Chief Botox Face and Blame the Woman, however, she directed me to the tables in Jackson Square in front of St. Louis, where I could find certain items from psychics.
Okay. All right, we're done.
You
don't understand a minute. I'll talk to you tomorrow night if you want to call. Thanks. All right, so 888-876-5593. Now it's 30 seconds, and all I can do is tell Jim in Richmond to please call me tomorrow night. Call earlier. We will talk as long as you want.
Yes, I will call you first thing tomorrow.
All right, I'm looking forward to it. Thank you, Jim, and thanks for waiting.
Thank you.
All right, so that pretty much is it. Yeah, that's a wrap. 21 hours from now, we do it all again. Until then, we thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls, but above all, I thank you for calling. It's what makes the show easy for me to do, and you know I like easy. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.